All right, we're holding on Chof Ches Amud Beis, about halfway down the wide lines. Line begins politely. All right, we're still in the middle of talking about the various remedies and things that you're allowed and not allowed to do for medicinal purposes on Sabbath. It's probably a good time to mention, I was telling this briefly to Rafal yesterday after the shiur, that you have to ask, given we said yesterday you're not supposed to use most of these remedies in Shas nowadays anyway, because nishtanu ativim, because people's natures have changed, and therefore if you use them, then it may cause you to doubt the words of the Chachamim, then what is it doing as part of the Torah in the first place? And why is it placed in the Gemara?
If these things were only meant for a certain period of time, then what are they doing in the Torah, which is meant for all time?
There is a sicha where the Rebbe once talked about this. You can find
in the Chelek of Gimel and put the sicha. The Rebbe discussed the idea that there's an other Me'elion, there's a perfect human image up above in Shemayim, like looking for the thing.
The way a human being is on earth should be a perfect reflection of that. And to some extent it is, but not perfectly, because now we're not on that level. So in the olden times, when people were on that level, a person's body, a person's physical makeup and everything more closely reflected how it is Lamaila. And therefore these remedies,
which actually are part of Torah after all, they have a source in one here, therefore they work down here for human beings on earth also.
As opposed to nowadays, we're not on that level. We're on a lower level. We don't, our bodies and the chemical makeup and whatever of our bond and whatever of our bodies doesn't fully reflect how it should be. So therefore we've changed, and therefore these remedies don't work. But nevertheless, it's
going to go back the way it was.
Maybe. Well, I mean, Limoy Samashiach, there won't be any diseases anyway, so it'll also be a moot point. But the point is that at least, yeah, the makeup of our bodies then will more closely reflect how it's supposed to be Lamaila.
And we say the Torah is Mitzchit.
The Torah is Mitzchit, but the humanity is different. The humanity is not Mitzchit. I mean, humanity in general is, but the specifics of how a person's body works and whatever is not necessarily Mitzchit. The same way as, for example, here we've been having throughout everything we've had in this parak so far, half of what we learned about in the previous parak, we say nowadays is inapplicable in one way or another because the Goyish society has changed or whatever. Doesn't mean the Torah is still mitzvah. You still have the din, for example, that you're not allowed to stable an animal with a goy or take treatment from them, etc. The din is still a din. The application of it has changed because society is different now. The same way, the medicinal things that we're saying over here are still a valid part of Torah, but human makeup has changed, and therefore they're not applicable.
I want to remind you a story about
to remind it to you.
No, I don't remember what it was. Okay. All right.
So I don't know what the Rebbe says in that tikkun. So could you say, therefore, that by learning these dinim and these things, we're basically triggering something above that's also having an effect on us?
I don't know if it ever says so in so many words in the sikha, but yeah, I guess that would be the idea. I mean, in general, when we learn something in Torah down here on earth, then it evokes something corresponding up Lamaila. So yeah. It would mean that to the extent that in the way in which these various conditions and whatever refer to something Lamaila, then yeah, learning about the remedies for them or whatever helps undo them, kind of. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Some of them, like Rafal was saying yesterday, some of them are actually similar to things that they know of in Eastern medicine and Chinese medicine and whatever. So I don't know. They may yet find that some of them they may yet find the active. And you have whole books about the Gemara and medicine, for example, where they try to find, like in these various recipes, what's the active ingredient. We talked yesterday, for example, about scurvy and maybe olive oil. Those kinds of things. Yeah.
So actually, nobody says that actual medicine is not using some derivative of these things.
Right. In that sense, it's some derivative, but the point is, what it says already from the time of the Rishonim is we shouldn't use these exact recipes that it says in the Gemara. Right. But no, obviously you use whatever the doctors of that period say. If they happen to say something that coincides with what the Gemara says, and there are such things sometimes, then sure,
which,
but it's not.
Which, if we translate them as of today, we could say these remedies apply to the same remedies, but in a different shape and form.
Possible. Could be. All right, so let's get started with the actual Gemara. Again, the line begins obliquely. We're holding at the end of that line. Amar Rabba Bar Zutra, Amar Rav Chanina, Malin Oznayim B'Shabbos. You're allowed to lift up ears on Shabbos.
So Rashi explains that what we're talking, not the ears themselves per se, but we're talking about, you have the gidim, which gidim in Gemara terminology has many different meanings. It can mean tendons, it can mean nerves, it can mean blood vessels. Over here, what it means, basically, Rashi describes, sometimes they fall downward, and therefore the jaw gets dislocated. So basically, we're talking about the temporomandibular joint, the TMJ, where sometimes you have, even nowadays. No, it's right next to those nine. And how would they treat it? By yanking up on the ears, and that way getting everything back into place. That's what's called mouthing those nine. So you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. You're allowed to do it on Shabbos, Rashi says, because otherwise there's a sakana involved. Yeah. Okay, Tani Rav Shmuel with a dislocated jaw. Tani Rav Shmuel by Yehuda, but Yad Avalei B'Sam, so Rav Shmuel by Yehuda taught, there is a condition on that, though. It has to be, you do it by hand, for example, like by pulling up on the ears, not by doing it with a medicine, with a cream or whatever, like that you could conceivably smear or apply or whatever to the area. That not, because in general, like we said yesterday, you have a rule about not using medicines on Shabbos unless there's sakana
nefesh. It would be useless, a medicine.
Apparently there was some kind of medicine that would be useful for it, but wait, I'll tell you in a second what the Rambam seems to say about it. Ikadam the sam of aloi biyad. Others say the other way around. You should do it using a medicine, which I guess will relax the joints and allow it to snap back into place or whatever. I don't know. Avaloi biyad, but not with manual manipulation, not by pulling up on the ears or whatever. My time a mizraf zoris, because the problem is doing it by hand, you may come to cause a wound or scratch or whatever, and that would be actual chilul Shabbos daraita, as opposed to using a medicinal cream or whatever is at worst the malach is at worst something d'rabbanan. So now, the Rambam, actually, it was in Perek Echad, the Rambam recently, where he was discussing in Hilchos Shabbos, the Rambam
brings this halacha slightly differently. He says, Malin Oznayim, and should you allow it to on Shabbos because it doesn't involve sam. Which means
the Mepharshim on the Rambam, just in the Noitzah Kelim on the Rambam, to say evidently that Rambam had a different girsa in the Gemara over here, not that there's a possibility of doing it b'yad or b'sam. It always is only b'yad. There's never any sam involved by definition, like you said. Therefore, it's not considered under the rule. It's not under, in other words, when we have the rule that we were mentioning yesterday, that the Chachamim said in general, you're not allowed to take medicines on Shabbos unless it's a case of sakana, that doesn't apply to things that don't involve medicines at all, rather things like this that involve manual manipulation. So therefore, the Zeta never applied to those in the first place.
Why can't you just say the Rambam Paskin like one and not the other?
Because then the Rambam would have to specify. He would say, you can do it b'yad, but you can't do it b'sam. The fact that he said you can do it and there's no problem because it doesn't involve sam evidently means that the Rambam understood the Gemara to be saying that. Well, so that he had a different gear saying the Gemara evidently. Okay. Omer of Zutra Batovya Omer Rav, Ayin Shamorda, if an eye is rebelling, so what do you mean rebelling? Rashi says, like, the word murid, the basic meaning of the word murid means like to try and go out. Like a person is murdered, a person is rebelling and wants to go out from where they are. So the same thing, ayin shemorda means an eye that's bulging out of the socket as if like it's going to fall out or explode or whatever. So that kind of thing, mutzal akuchel of a Shabbos. You're allowed to apply eye medicine to it on Shabbos. Sovermina, now the Chachamim thought, when the Chachamim heard this din, they thought it meant, hani milahu d'shachi samon in me'esmo. That would mean, okay, if you have medicine already pre-ground up and mixed up before Shabbos, then you're allowed to apply it on Shabbos to an eye like that, to an infected eye like that. But they thought to say, but to grind up herbs for it on Shabbos and bring them through to Shosarabim, they thought, maybe not, because there's no sakonis, they thought, there's no sakonis nefoshis necessarily in an eye disease. Okay, the person may become blind. That doesn't necessarily rise to the level of sakonis nefoshis. There is, by the way, machloikas rishonim, based on the understanding of the Gemara over here. In the end, are we going to say that any time, you have rishonim, I think, in the Iri, who learns that in the end, the maskana is going to be that any time when you have a danger to a limb, such as an eye, then you can be machal Shabbos even daraisa for it. Most other rishonim say that no. If you have something that's dangerous to the entire body, then we said before, pikuach nefesh is doicha most of the Torah, including Shabbos. However, if it's something that's only a sakonas ever, you're allowed to have a goy do it. You're allowed to maybe do it with a shinui, but not to do it a full fledged malacha daraisa without a shinui for sakonas ever. That's the opinion. That's the accepted halacha as brought in Shulchan Aruch. So we're going to see, though, that an eye is different, but that you have...
Well, surgery on Shabbos,
hold on. Wait. Okay. So we're going to say that what we're going to end up saying is that eyes are different. But the point is that when it comes to other limbs of the body, if you have something that's a danger to one particular limb, you can have a goy do it, or you can have it done with a shinui or whatever, but not to do a malacha daraisa. Eyes, we're going to see, are different, but wait. So anyway, the Chachamim at first thought to say that an eye is like any other limb of the body. You can only do malachas d'rabbanan, for example, applying medicine, which is also d'rabbanan, but not to mix up medicine or carry it through Rosh Hashanah. However, then one of the Chachamim named Rabbi Yaakov told them, Rabbi Yehuda personally explained to me that no, this din that we're saying is that filo mishchat b'shabbes v'asuri derech Rosh Hashanah mutter. You're even allowed to grind up the ingredients and even to bring them through Rosh Hashanah in the case of an eye, in the case of this ayin shemarda. So, further on this, Rabbi Yehuda shorol mitchel ayin b'shabbes. Rabbi Yehuda sure enough allowed to apply eye medicine on Shabbos. Amalahu Rav Shmuel by Yehuda. However, Rav Shmuel by Yehuda, who said the original din that ayin shemarda, you're allowed to apply eye medicine on Shabbos, he said, apparently he understood that Rabbi Yehuda is saying more generally that you're allowed to do it, not even just for murder where like your eye is in danger of popping out or whatever, but even for a lesser, even for a lesser thing than that. So he didn't like that. He says, "Man sayes li Yehuda machil shabi." Whoever listens to Yehuda, apparently he was a colleague of his, so you don't have to call him Rabbi Yehuda, but whoever listens to Rabbi Yehuda, machil shabi is going to be machal Shabbos, because you're not allowed to do it. If it's, again, if it's murder, it's different, but not otherwise. Okay.
Murder would mean,
like I said, it's about to pop out. It's again, it actually says like it's bulging outward, like as if it's gonna pop out or explode or what have you. Yeah. Okay. Eventually, it happened once that Shmuel by Yehuda himself had an eye ache. Shalachle, so he sent a message to Rav Yehuda. Shoriya also. So what's the story? Would I be allowed to apply medicine on Shabbos day or not? In this case, apparently, again, Rabbi Yehuda had said you're allowed to grind up ingredients for medicine. You're allowed to carry it through Rosh Hashanah. In this case, Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda is asking Rabbi Yehuda, well, right now there's no medicine available. It needs to be ground up on Shabbos, or it needs to be brought through Rosh Hashanah. Would I be allowed? Shalach Le, Rabbi Yehuda sent back to him, L'chol al Mashori L'idach Asir. To everybody else, yes, it'll be Mutter, because that's the halacha. To you, since you're the one personally who said that it's Asir, and you said it would be Chilul Shabbos to do that, for you yourself, it's Asir. You yourself made it something Asir to you. And you have such a thing where a person is machmer on themselves in a din, and then they have to follow through with it. And why is that? It didn't rise to the level of pikuach nefesh necessarily. It was probably just some kind of thing where, yeah, there might. The Gemara is going to say soon, again, that eyes are different, that a disease involving the eye is more serious than one with other parts of the body, as we'll see soon. So I guess the situation was over here, that Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda's eye disease was not serious enough to be Mechal Shabbos D'Oraisa for. So therefore, Rav Yehuda would say that if it was that serious, it could be Mechal Shabbos D'Oraisa. In this case, it wasn't that serious, so therefore he's telling him, yeah.
So what do we do about today regarding a disease of a limb? The Gemara says it's not serious.
So again, most of the Rishonim understand it to be saying that when it's a disease involving an individual limb, where it doesn't affect the person, the health of the whole body, then it's not. Then it's something you have it done through a goy, or you have
right.
it done through
it
a shiur.
Right.
If it could endanger, then that's the korach nefesh. Then yeah. Okay. And Rabbi Yehuda continues, "V'chimidi dihu? Why you thought this din that I was saying that you're allowed to break Shabbos to treat an eye infection? You thought that it was my own din that I made up? D'mar Shmuel, it actually comes from Mar Shmuel, from my Rebbe Shmuel. And how do we see that? Hahi amser, dehahi amser, agoyes habach meiv.
Shmuel,
the famous Amora. Yes. Namely, dahi amser dehavoy be Mar Shmuel. There was a certain maidservant in the household of Mar Shmuel." She had an eye infection on Shabbos. Specifically, dekodcha means that Rashi says that it was hot. Her eye was hot, which shows that it was inflamed on Shabbos. Sobcha, she was crying out from the pain.
Nobody did anything about it because they figured it's not something you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for. And apparently, again,
there wasn't anything ready made, so they figured you can't be Mechal Shabbos for it. Toka Eina, in the end, her eye exploded.
From the
disease. L'macha nafik Mar Shmuel v'darash. So the next day, Mar Shmuel went out and darshed to the public. You should know, ayin shemoda mutar l'kayich l'b'Shabbos. An eye that is in danger of popping out, you're allowed to put medicine in it on Shabbos. And, as Rabbi Yehuda added, even to actually prepare the medicine on Shabbos. My time, why is an eye so important? Why is it more important than any other part of the body?
The
the nerves of the eye are connected to, depend on the ubanta of the heart. Rashi says, okay, no, I made a continuation of it, but I forgot to print it out and bring it, but it's fine, I'll wing it. But the ubanta, Rashi says ubanta means the fat around the heart. In medical ease, they call it pericardium. So the nerves of the eye are connected to that. It's not fat per se, but whatever. It's the stuff around, the thing around the pouch in which the heart sits or whatever. That's the muscles, whatever. Yeah, Rashi uses the expression, Kaupesh means like a covering or whatever. So yeah, the pericardium or whatever. Anyway, Rashi says the point is the eyes, the nerves of the eye or the sight of the eye or whatever is connected to the Kaupesh of the heart. Tosfos says it doesn't necessarily mean a physical connection. It means that what a person sees depends on what they understand in their heart. Like the way you perceive the world around you, the way you perceive it with your eyes, depends on the understanding of your heart.
How do they know that?
The Chacham knew the same way as they know all kinds of things in medicine, as we were discussing. That's what I was saying yesterday. Marshall says the reason why the Gemara mentions all these medicinal concoctions and whatever is to show us the Chachamim also knew their way around medicine. Don't think that maybe they didn't know this stuff and only the Greeks or whatever knew it. No, they knew it also. So anyway,
the opposite, though, the heart not depending on the eye.
Well, no, but that's the point. There's a connection between them and therefore something involving the eye would end up affecting the heart.
So again, according to Rashi, we're talking about a physical connection. So Steinsaltz points out, I mean, we don't know of any physical connection specifically between the eye and the heart any more than any other. I mean, you have blood vessels. You have blood vessels everywhere.
But nerves connecting.
Yeah, you have nerves connecting everything in the body. But he points out that you have the optic nerve from the back of the eye runs through the brain. And in that sense, in other words, you have a real connection between the eye and the brain much more than you do with other limbs. So maybe that's what according to Rashi, that's what the Gemara
means. We're not talking about the brain.
Okay, with the heart, meaning in other words, like the seat of emotions and thoughts and feelings and whatever, which is okay. Anyway, that's how Steinsaltz said maybe what it means. Tosfos anyway is saying we're not talking about a physical connection. We're talking about a connection in that the person's eyesight and a person's understanding of the world around them, which is in the heart and in the mind or whatever, are very closely connected. So therefore, again, most of the Rishonim understand that what the Gemara is saying is that only eyes are in that category. Other limbs of the body are not. That other limbs of the body are not in that category, that a danger to them is so important as to warrant being Mechal Shabbos Daraisa. The Meiri holds that it is. The Meiri holds that all the Gemara is saying is that eye diseases can be much more serious than they appear at first glance.
But saying that eye disease in one week is connected to the heart, may affect the heart.
Right. So according to most of the Rishonim, it means only eyes. In other words, as opposed to if there was something, if there was a disease
that would affect, for example, the ear or the leg or whatever, that you couldn't be, where it wouldn't affect the health of the whole body, then that you can't necessarily be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa for, but you can have a goy do it, you can do it with a shinri or whatever. As opposed to the Meiri understands it to mean that that's true of any limb. We're just mentioning the eye because with the eye you have conditions that can be that can really be much more serious than they appear at first glance. Anyway, Kegoin Mai, what kind of eye diseases, what kind of symptoms are we talking about that would be that you're Mechal Shabbos for? Amar of Yehuda, Kegoin, for example, any of the following. Rira, you have pus or some kind of discharge coming from the eyes. Ditsa, or a stabbing pain in the eye. Dhamma, you have a burst blood vessel in the eye. Dimosa, you have constant tearing. The kidcha, you have a burning pain that it feels hot. Utchilas ocha, all of this at the beginning of the illness, at the beginning of the infection. That's when it has to be treated, and we're saying you're Mechal Shabbos if you have any of these symptoms. La puki, soif oichlo, patsucha ena deloy. As opposed to once the infection has mostly run its course and you just have the end of it, and you want to put in some more medicine, in order to clear and brighten his eyesight, that you're not Mechal Shabbos for. Because anyway, to clear it up, to make his eyesight clearer. In other words, the infection is basically over. The infection has basically run its course. But now you need a little extra medicine in there in order to improve things. That you can't be Mechal Shabbos for. Okay. Amar Rav Yehuda. So now Rav Yehuda says more things that we talk about as far as health advice. Zibura, if somebody was bitten by a bee or a wasp or whatever. Udacharze silva, or if his skin was punctured by a thorn. the simta, or if he has an abscess, or the kovlaena, or he has an eye ache.
Or a person who has a fever. All of those,
kulu, in all these five cases, bay bunny, if a person with any of these conditions goes to a bathhouse, takanta, then it's dangerous for him.
If he has
any of these things, if he was bitten by a bee, if his skin was punctured by a charde silva, he was punctured by a thorn, the simta, he has an abscess, or the koyev la'ena, if his eyes hurt, the osteolava ishto, he has a fever. Miss Mama, because all of those, if you go to a bathhouse, you're likely to catch germs from the water or whatever, I don't know. Okay, so all of those are dangerous to go to the bathhouse. It actually says further at the end of the Amud that the problem is that you go to a bathhouse, your entire body gets heated up, and with these kinds of conditions, that's bad for you. Okay, more rules. Chama l'chama. Hot food
is hot. It's hot food, and we don't mean hot in the sense of the temperature of it. In ancient medicine, you can also find it in the Rambam, for example, there's characterizations of certain foods that are always called hot regardless of their actual temperature, and foods that are always called cold regardless of their actual temperature. So basically, like spicy versus bland, or I don't know what the exact criteria are.
Winter and summer vegetables.
Yeah, maybe it's winter and summer vegetables. So chama l'chama, hot vegetables, for example, Rashi says radishes, l'chama, are good for a disease involving heat, like a fever. The silka l'tzina, silka, which is beets, are good for chill. Or I guess tobacco is a different gear. So lazika is for a problem when a person is suffering from gas. Then beets are good for that. The chilufa takanta, if you switch it around and give radishes to the person who has a cold or intestinal gas, or you give the beets to a person who has a fever, takanta, that kind of thing is dangerous. Because the radish makes them colder, the beets make them hotter, whatever.
Similarly, chamini la'akriba, if a person is bitten by a scorpion, you should apply hot water to the area. The kariri l'zibura, and if he was stung by a bee, you should apply cold water. And again, the chilufa takanta, if you switch them around, then it's dangerous.
So a scorpion,
you apply hot water, and a bee sting, you apply cold. In many places, Siddur talks about the idea that scorpions, because in various places, Gemara talks about their bite as being cold, and you were saying you need hot water to counteract that, so therefore scorpions represent a coldness in Avodah Hashem, as opposed to, for example, a snake bite, which is a symptom of being overheated and overexcited about things of pleasure. So that's you provide them with the opposite. Therefore, so an akrava. So an akrava, a scorpion, and a person is plagued by too much coldness in physically or also in Avodah Hashem, then the remedy for it is heat. The remedy for it is to apply heat. Tosfos mentions, by the way, on this basis, the Gemara in Chagiga that mentions that a person is bitten by a bee and if a person is stung by a bee and by a scorpion, then he's in real trouble, because then what's he going to do? He can't use hot and he can't use cold, because each one will harm the other.
Okay.
If you can't, then it'll be a problem.
Wait, is that what this Gemara is saying here, or is it saying...
No, here the Gemara is just saying each one individually. No. So you have two different things. Hot food for hot kinds of for fevers, cold kinds for cold diseases, cold foods for cold diseases. Aside from that, a separate rule is if you were stung by a scorpion, you need hot water applied to it. And if you're stung by a bee, then you need cold water. Because both for sakanta and to switch it around would be dangerous.
Probably. Sometimes it could also be an Nisayan. We had the other day the story of Ben Jomo, who was bitten by a snake, and it was an Nisayan. Is he going to be over on Dibret HaChamim and then get bitten by a snake because he was over on Dibret HaChamim, and he passed the test? He was going to argue with Rabbi Shmuel that he should be able to be treated by the Min, but in the end, he died before he had the chance to carry that through. Okay.
So he
passed the test. But he had his strength in Elam. Speaking of, by the way, I forgot to mention when we were talking about the whole thing of being treated by a mean, I forgot to mention actually the Moshe Feinstein has a couple of interesting shuvahs about what about a person is being treated, what about going to a psychologist or a psychiatrist through the mean. There you have a real problem. They don't treat you with medicines after all, they treat you with talking to you, and they're very likely to stick in a few ideas of their own in there. So there you have to be careful about that. Similar to Lakshin that Tosfos was talking about over there. Okay. Continuing the Gemara. Look, silver.
a person was punctured, a person's skin was punctured by a thorn, then you need hot water for it. But clearly what happens
is that, cold.
I don't know if the thorn is cold or not, but the point is hot water is good for a puncture from a thorn. You need cold water for chastanita. Over here, it actually explains that it means cracks on the face. Elsewhere, it actually talks about that it means some kind of scabs on the face, maybe like acne, maybe something more serious. I don't know. Whatever. So cold water is good for that. Again, the chibot ha-sakan, switch them around, really dangerous. Chala l'sipuri, when a person has had blood left from their shoulders, as we talked about the other day, and therefore now you have a puncture in the skin there that needs to be treated. For that, you should put vinegar on it. Umunini l'tanita, and small fish are good for after a fast, you should eat small fish. And again, civil for that content, to switch it around would be dangerous. To have vinegar after a fast, with small fish after bloodletting is no good for you. Tachli the tibura sakan. If a person eats cress, which is a type of herb, we mentioned in a few of the medicines yesterday. So if a person eats tachli, cress, the tibura, and then they have bloodlet, is sakanta, is dangerous for them. Also, ishta the tibura, if a person had a fever and then has bloodlet, is also sakanta. Koyiv ain of the tibura, if a person has an eye ache and then they have bloodlet, is also a danger. Sheni the dog dum. On the second day, meaning the day after, after eating fish, you can have blood left. In other words, the second day, meaning the day before. So if a person ate fish on Monday, on Sunday, for example, then he can go have blood left safely on Monday, but not on the same day. If he ate fish on Sunday, then it's safe for him to go do bloodletting on Monday. But only so that's only the second day. So Shani the dog dumb. Similarly, the opposite, Shani the dumb dog, and vice versa is also. On the day after a person has had bloodlet, they can eat fish. As Mepharshim say, it doesn't necessarily mean it'll be good for him, but at least it won't necessarily harm him, as opposed to if he were to eat it the same day, then it would be harmful for him. Tosfos mentioned that on the basis of a Gemara in the Dorim, when a person has bloodlet and immediately eats fish, on that same day, then it'll be harmful for him. A couple of Mepharshim, by the way, point to something that it says, the Gemara says in Shabbos. The Gemara discusses what days of the week is good to do bloodletting. The Gemara discusses in principle, you ought not to do it on Friday. This is the same time to do with mazalot or whatever. But people, practically speaking, do that because then what happens? Then they figure they can make their Shabbos meal on Friday night, do double duty. It'll be a Shabbos meal as well as it'll be the meal that you're supposed to have. You're supposed to have a good meal after bloodletting. And therefore, Shem would say, Hashem, therefore Hashem protects the innocent. So therefore, now we know we eat fish Friday night, we eat fish by the Shabbos meal. This is based on all Gemara over here. Shani the dumb dog. As long as you had bloodletting done on Friday, then on Shabbos you can safely eat fish.
So that's considered.
The next day, I guess.
Shlishi loy sakanta. On the other hand, if you eat fish on the third day, meaning 2 days after having bloodletting, then that's dangerous. So don't. So if you had bloodletting on Sunday, for example, I don't know. That would help, I guess. I don't know. That would help then. Rabbi Yaakov then has another taste, by the way, on the shame of the dumb dog. He says what it is so you have a wedding meal a lot of times. They serve fish. And what do you have? You have the wedding, you have a chasana meal, and then afterwards you have the husband and wife have relations for the first time. So the dam the dog. So the dam comes on the day after the dog, in that sense.
Not on the same day, but the next day.
We learn about it. The hamakis dam, when somebody has had bloodletting done, lod yoicho chagbash, then afterwards they should not eat any of the things where the acronym for them is chagbash, namely like cholov, or like vino, or like basin, or like shakalai. Not milk, or cheese, or onions, or cress.
All those things would be bad for him after bloodletting.
Okay, so what happens if he didn't eat one of these things? What should he do to counteract it? Amar Abaya, nice to the east of the chalo or the east of the chamra. So Abaya says you should take a reviat of vinegar and a reviat of wine. Un arvinhu bahadi atavi, mix them together, finishki and drink it.
Mix vinegar
with wine and drink it.
Wine?
Yeah. And aside of it, he was going to different views that they're trying to have. You mix a reviat of wine and a reviat of beer. I don't know. I'm not into drinking alcohol or drinking the fall, so I don't know whether it would take
long.
Okay, whatever. The wine is alcohol. The chimafne, now after a person has taken to the treatment, the next time you have to go to the bathroom, one mafne elam is rakatali. You should do it only to the east side of the city. Remember, in those days, they didn't have bathrooms inside buildings. You defecated out in the open. Only do it on the east of the city, mishum dekasha recha, because the smell of the smell of his excretion is going to be very, very bad. So like this, the wind doesn't blow that often from the east, and if it does, it's not a particularly strong wind. So this way, the rest of the city won't have to suffer from the bad smell.
They didn't burn the excrement?
Eventually, I guess, once it dries out, maybe they did, but we're talking about when it's fresh. Then, yeah. More dinim about types of treatments you're allowed to do on Shabbos. Amar b'shulam lady malin unkeli b'shabbos. You're allowed to lift up the unkeli on Shabbos. My unkeli. So of course you have the same question as the Gemara does. Amar abba istumcha the liver. It is the istumcha of the heart. So Rashi has two explanations. So what is the istumcha? Rashi has two explanations. One is that it means the diaphragm. The first explanation is actually says it's the diaphragm, which is under the heart and under the lungs. So sometimes like it gets dislocated out of place. Sometimes it gets dislocated and they have to pull it back into place. Yeah, I don't know, dislocated per se, or maybe just like misshapen, maybe it could be talking about a food, it could be talking about a diaphragm hernia or something. I don't know. And then whatever. That's the first explanation. Second explanation actually says it's the cartilage in front of the heart. So you have between your ribs, you have a thing in the middle over here, with a little thing that you have, and then at the bottom of it, you have a little piece called the xiphoid. According to Rashi's second explanation, that's what we're talking about. Sometimes it gets bent inward, and then it causes the person trouble with breathing.
Because we're calling it istumcha the liver. So Rashi apparently understands that the word istumcha is related to the word samuch, which samuch can mean what supports the heart, which would be the diaphragm, or it could be what's next to the heart, which would be this cartilage. But the ribs are not the rib. If a rib gets dislocated, you have bigger problems. You don't have to be said you can do that on Shabbos.
Do you have a diaphragm dislocated? You
also. Yeah, but it's not. I mean, a person could still breathe with it. It would just be harder. But whatever. I don't know. Anyway, there's other explanations. Also, the Aruch I think says it means the opening for the stomach. Whatever it is, you're allowed to manipulate it and then put it back into place on Shabbos.
So that's the uncle. My uncle. So what is the remedy? How do you fix that such a situation? Might become more. You should take cumin, kruya. You should take a handful of it, or Rashi. Not Rashi. The Aruch gives a different explanation that it's some kind of in kap egla. It's like a spoonful that holds about a fistful. So Rashi explains that the egla is a fist. So Rashi understands that. That's Rashi's explanation of kruya. The Aruch says it's some kind of herb. Rashi says it's a measure. The Aruch says that it's a name, that Keruya is the name of an herb. And then in the Samsino Gemara, they translated it as maybe it's caraway. Keruya, caraway, maybe there's a similarity. I don't know. Anyway, okay. Vaninia and mint. Vagdona. Ninia is mint. Yeah, you can see Rashi, minta. Yeah. Vagdona and agdona, which Rashi says is a bitter herb. The French word Rashi uses marubia as a plant called an English hoarhound, but then Rashi says lana matagamin and gidin. Lana is wormwood, so I'm not sure whether Rashi means that it's hoarhound or wormwood. Whatever it is, some kind of bitter herb. So you take that, the citri, which is a plant in English, it's called savory. The avada and azo, the Rambam seems to understand azo a little bit differently. The Rambam in Tanai and Hilchos Parah, I think, mentions that azo is what they use as a spice, so it would be something more like marjoram or thyme or something like that, whatever, anyway. Anyway, you take all those ingredients. You have different kinds of conditions that involve the istumcha of the liver that could be the result of the istumcha being out of place. With liver, if the person now is having heart problems because of this, istumcha of the liver, so what do? B'chamra, mix all these ingredients into wine and you should drink that wine with these ingredients in it. The simonach, the way to remember that you should do it in wine, but yain, yisamach l'davenish, as the pasuk says, wine makes a person happy. So that kind of thing helps for a heart condition, you take it in wine. Lerucha, if a person is having a problem with ruach, Rashi says that it's a disease, Rashi says shachefes shemachmas ruach, a wasting disease because of air.
So maybe it actually means tuberculosis. I don't know. Whatever it is, for that kind of bill, maybe it just means that the person is having breathing difficulties. Whatever it is, so for that, the Maya, you should mix these ingredients in water. The Simonach, and the way to remember is that the pasuk says, Ruach HaLikim Merachat Zafnamoyim, the wind of Hashem, the spirit, whatever, fluttered over the surface of the water. So that helps you remember there's an association between Ruach and Mayim. Lakuda, if the person is suffering from Kuda, Rashi says means that when a woman is giving birth and she's in labor and she has chills. The Oroch has a different explanation that it means some kind of ruach that afflicts women after childbirth. So maybe it's postpartum depression. I don't know. Whatever it is, the kuda, the shichur, you mix these ingredients into beer and she should drink it. The simonach, and the way to remember that is the pasuk says v'chada al shichma by Rivka. Her jug was on her shoulder. So v'chada is like the word kuda. Shichma is similar. No, but it's similar enough. Kad is similar to the word kuda, the name of the disease, the name of the condition. Shichma is similar to shichra, which means beer. So that helps you remember. That's what kuda, you put it in beer.
Kuda is depression?
So I don't know. Again, according to Rashi, it means like chills when a woman is giving birth. According to the Aruch, he doesn't specifically say, he doesn't explicitly explain. He says it means a ruach that sometimes seizes women after they give birth. So I'm thinking maybe it means postpartum depression. I don't know. Could be. I don't know. All right. Rav Acha Bred, yeah. Rav Acha Bre de Rava Shochet Lo Lekudo Ba'ad Yadavi. Rav Acha Bre de Rava, when he needed to take this kind of medicine, he would grind all these ingredients together. The Shochet Lo Malei Chomesh Esbal. He would take the amount that would fit in his five fingers, meaning a whole handful. Shochet Lo, he would take. Malei Chomesh Esbal. The amount that would fit in his five fingers, meaning a handful, Rashi says. Vishasi Lo, and then he would drink it in whatever kind of liquid that we were saying before, wine or water or beer, as the case may be. Rav Ashi shochet kochav b'chav b'chodei. Rav Ashi, on the other hand, when he needed to take this medicine, he would grind each one individually. Maybe he figured it'll be more effective that way. I don't know. The shochet moloy etzba'osei rabsi or moloy etzba'ei zetzerasi. He would take the amount that fits between his big finger, his thumb, and his little finger. He would take a pinch of it like this, and that's how much he would have.
Very little.
A very little amount. Yeah. Omer the papa. However, the papa says, "I'm not api lachohani v'loy tesoi." I tried all of this. I tried this remedy for stumcha the liver, and it didn't help me. I wasn't healed. Ad to omali ahu taya, until a certain taya, an Arab merchant, told me, I see kuzachanta, do like this. Take a new cup, umal yemaya, fill it with water, v'rami be'tavada de jogsha, de toli le be'kochli, put in it a spoonful of honey that had been hanging outside under the stars, so when it's dark and the stars are out. Have it as a spoon, yeah. Ulamacha ishti, and the next day drink that water with this honey that stayed out overnight mixed into it. Abi hachi vieta. So yeah, I did that, and Papa says, and I was cured.
Whatever.
Right?
Good.
Yeah. You have a lot of times in the Gemara. The Gemara has interesting, useful advice from Taye, from Arab merchants, yeah. We had yesterday also. We had another one like that. Okay. Sometimes. I don't know if this one. Maybe this one was. I don't know. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. Shisha Dvarim Merapin Asachar L'Macholya. There are six things that if a person eats them, they heal a sick person from his illness. Or for us in Rafua, and the healing is a very effective healing. In other words, in the sense like it'll... No, the pastures. Or for us in Rafua, and the healing is effective in the sense that they strengthen him for the future, that he won't get sick again as easily. The Elohim, they are as follows. Kruv, cabbage. Utrodin, and beet. Umei sisin yvesha, and liquid of dry sisin. Rashi, the French word that Rashi uses is an herb in English called pennyroyal, like this, related to mint. You dry that out, then you soak it in water, and you drink it. So cabbage, beet. An infusion that you make from dried pennyroyal. Borscht is something different. No, each of these separately. We're not talking about you mix all six of these together. We're talking about each one separately. The kevas, and the fourth thing is keva, the first stomach of an animal. Or actually, keva is the fourth stomach, rather. It has digestive enzymes that's similar to a human stomach. The haras, and womb of an animal, the etzeres hakaved, and the diaphragm, which is next to the liver.
Etzeres
hakaved. We bring it as part of a carbon. No. Yeah, you have a couple of it. Rashi over here explains that it means the diaphragm, which is to which the liver is to which part of the liver is attached. other Mephoshim talk about that maybe it means one of the lobes of the liver or whatever.
Yeah, that was a different name.
We had, so there's more than one name for it. Yeah, we had before we had maybe that's called the Simcha of the liver because we were talking about it in connection with the heart. You were talking about it in connection with a different thing. So the standard term for it in Chumash is Yeseret HaKavod. Okay, so anyway, that's Tzedakah explains it in the diaphragm. Other Mephoshim talk about that maybe it means one of the lobes of the liver, whatever. It doesn't mean the gallbladder. No. Anyway. The Yeshem Abdon Akdogen Ktanim. Some say also small fish, unless you had bloodletting, as we said at the top of the Amud. Veloyoid, and not only that, small fish are not only good for a person who's sick. Elishadogen Ktanim, Makru Namad, and Kogopish Aladam. Small fish like that, I guess they mean like sardines or whatever, they make fruitful and they increase the whole body of a person, called Gufishalatim, the whole body of a person. They're good for your general health. They're good for your general health. On the other hand, there are 10 things that will cause a sick person to relapse, that his illness will come back, and then it will be even worse than it was before. And they are as follows. Number one, somebody who eats meat from an ox, beef. Number two, shuman, if he eats fat. Wow. Yeah.
But didn't we see in the Gemara that shuman was good?
It depends. Well, shuman is... No, we haven't usually talked about Gemara. We haven't usually talked in the Gemara about shuman itself being a healthy food. What we talk about is shuman is mutter as opposed to chelev, which is otter. You have the classic case where a person has a piece of meat in front of him, which he's not sure if it's chelev or shuman, or he has two pieces, whatever, one is chelev, one is shuman, and he eats one and the other one gets lost, where then he has to bring an osh and tolu. But here we're saying that fat itself is bad for you. Okay, on the
butter
side. Butter sure means meat from an ox. I guess yes. It means schmaltz. It can mean any kind of fat. Yeah, on the side it says. And on the side of it here it says it means fat. It means kosher or fat from an animal or schmaltz from birds or fish or whatever. The Bach has a different gear. So the Bach actually says that it's boser shomen. Yeah. So in that case, going to the Bach, it comes out one thing: fat meat from an ox.
Yeah. Right.
Bosa soli, also a person eats roast meat. That's not good. The sautsipurim, because of Pesach is an exception. Leil shimurim, Hashem protects it. Yeah. Okay. Bosa tzipurim, meat from birds, chicken, I guess, or whatever. Ubeitza tzluya, roasted, I guess, hard-boiled eggs. The shachlayim, cress, this plant that we've mentioned a few times. Also, we're talking about, mainly we're talking about... Shachlayim, we had tachli with Aramaic word. A lot of times a shin in Hebrew and a top in Aramaic are cognate. Okay, now remember we're talking about things that a person who just got over an illness shouldn't be doing because it'll cause them to relapse. So far we had a few different kinds of foods. And some of them, for example, I mean that Amman writes in the Hilchos Deos that in general, the Sar Shur is in general bad for a person and a person shouldn't be eating it healthy or not. Okay, anyway. The Tiglachas, also getting a haircut. Umerchot. And it's not good for a person who's just getting over having been sick.
Okay.
Umerchot, so going to the bathhouse. Ugvina, cheese. Vekaved and liver.
Merchot is not private.
It means the public bathhouse. Right. So Rashi mentioned before at the bottom of the previous Amud, we said, for example, there are things to which you should apply hot water, but that means locally, not go your whole group into hot water. That would be bad. He said, or in his connection, for example, with a person who was punctured by a thorn. So here it's the same kind of thing. If something where you have to apply hot water locally, then yeah, but not yet. Okay. The Yeshem Mapagoyan, some say also nuts.
Bad for you.
Are bad for a person who's recovering from an illness. The Yeshem Aptishurin, and some say also cucumbers. In fact, Tonad Ve Rabbi Shmuel, the Braita of the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they taught, Loma Nikra Shmon Tishurin, why are these vegetables called Tishurin? Because they're as hard for a person's body like swords, and therefore you should avoid them. So they said, remember the cucumbers. Okay. So they're saying in the pocket. No, they're saying that we remember fondly that we used to eat these things in the time. Okay, I think earlier in our Masechta, I think the Gemara made a distinction between whether they're small or large. So, for example, you know, nowadays you have the ones, you know, you have the normal cucumber size ones that you buy in the store, and then you have the small ones, the curvy. So there could be a distinction between those.
Yes, it's here. The small ones are beneficial.
Small ones are, yeah. Okay. But there you go, then. Okay. I mean, again, the Shtanu Artikim, so not necessarily is all the health advice you and the Gemara applicable in the Pshat sense nowadays, but nevertheless, again, it's still part of Torah. No, that's the thing. He doesn't. The Rambam has one chapter in Hilchos Deis where he gives medical advice. Aside from that, there are a number of medical writings of his, which I'm not very familiar with. But in Hilchos Deis, yes, some of the things he says don't tail with things in the Gemara. Some not. The Rambam himself was a doctor, so he knew what's going on. Some of these things, it was his understanding, apparently, that they had changed since the time of the Gemara. So, yeah.
Today, you say that about the Rambam also, though. Right? Maybe it's changed.
That's changed since the time of the Rambam, indeed. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
They found Egyptian mummies and they found the diseases that we know of today.
Some, yes. We're not saying that all the diseases they had then don't exist nowadays. But certain things about body chemistry and whatever were different enough to make a difference as far as the applicability of these things and whatever. One classic example that you always have, one really classic example where you have the Shtanu Artikim from the time of the Gemara till now, is the Gemara tells us throughout Masechta Nidah, when we get to it in a couple of years, that's the Shem, throughout Masechta Nidah, the general assumption is that when a woman has her period, it's all the bleeding is over in one day, two the most. Do you know of any women nowadays that happens? Do you know? It usually takes 5-6 days.
Yes, but
yeah, but not, and that's not the majority.
Right.
Also in Hilchos Nidah, in those days, most women had very regular periods. Nowadays, it's much less common. So in that already, you can see the shine of it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Just by a sign.
Yeah. So there are certain differences in body chemistry that are enough to make a difference. Yeah. All right.
They have to be differences.
Yeah.
They didn't eat the same food.
Exactly. They didn't live in the same conditions. They didn't do the same kinds of work. Yeah, et cetera. Yeah.
Change the food.
Getting back to the Mishnah, the Mishnah had said you're not allowed to take a haircut from a goy anywhere because we're afraid that the goy may use the opportunity to take the razor and cut the yid. Well,
apply for this.
Let's see. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a brisa. Yisrael amistapa ba'ovik l'chavim, if a Jew is getting a haircut from a goy, roya b'mara, he should look in a mirror while that's going on. And we'll see, well, the Gemara will explain soon what the mirror accomplishes. But on the other hand, if a Jew is giving a goya haircut, Kivinchi yield the blue reese, so shame it to. Once the Jew reaches the part of the hair close to the blurist, we learned earlier in the Masechta that the goyim would customarily leave some part of their hair growing long in the back or the front or a mohawk or whatever it was in honor of their getchka. So therefore, if a yid is giving a goya haircut, he's not allowed to leave that blurist because that would be leaving something that he's doing in honor of a desire. So therefore, Shemit Yodeh, when he reaches near the blurtis, he should stop. As the Gemara will say soon, he has to stop a certain distance away from the blurtis. That way he's not specifically leaving the blurtis for Avodah Zarah. He's leaving other hair around it as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's analyze. Olamah, he's through all on a stop of over to Chavim Roya
B'mara. It's a blurtis that's not for Avodah Zarah.
Then apparently it wouldn't be a problem. Here we're talking about one that's for Avodah Zarah. It actually says, Shemit Yodeh, Avodah Zarah. Okay. Fine, let's analyze. Omamah, Yisrael amistapam lo'ev tchavim roya b'mara. We said if a Jew is getting a haircut from a goy, you should look in a mirror while he's doing it. So the question is, hey chidomi, what's the scenario? Ibir shesarabim lomali mara. If we're talking about that, if it's in your shesarabim, so what do you need a mirror for? No, it doesn't mean obviously in the middle of the suite, but it means like on a store that's right in front of your shesarabim.
The open window, open door,
whatever, so people can easily see. Now, the assumption is, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, that the point is not so much that the mirror will allow you to see behind you and make sure that the goy is not trying anything. The point of the mirror, the Gemara is going to say, is the point of the mirror is you're looking to see if he's doing a good job. Now, only a person who is choshu, only a person who is important and therefore has reason to care about his appearance, is going to be looking in a mirror. So as the Gemara is going to say in a couple of lines, therefore, when you're looking in a mirror, the goy is going to figure you're an adam choshu, and therefore he's going to be more afraid to harm you, as we said before about an adam choshu in other contexts. But the question still is, to begin with, on the face of it, why should that be? If it's in Rosh Hashanah, what do you need a mirror for? If the guy tries anything funny, everybody will see. So therefore, he's not going to try. The Ibir Shasa Yachid Kiroya may have. And if you're in Rosh Hashanah, what is it going to help to have a mirror? The guy could do it anyway and figure he'll get away with it. The answer is, La'olam Rosh Hashanah Yachid. We are talking about you in Rosh Hashanah Yachid. The Kivin Ikamara Mishadika Adam Koshu. Since he's looking in a mirror, he seems to be an important person, because only important people would look in mirrors to make sure that their haircut is being done exactly right, and therefore the guy is going to be afraid to harm the Jew because he's going to figure he could get in trouble with the government.
So he has to bring a mirror with him?
I guess if the barber has one available, then fine. If not, I guess he has to bring one with him. Yeah.
He has to show
that he's caring about his appearance and therefore looking in a mirror.
He
would have to bring one, practically speaking.
Right.
Okay. Now, Tosfos brings up an important point over here, based on the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi actually says, expands on this a little bit, that if a person is getting a haircut from a goy, again, he should be looking in a mirror, but if he's getting a haircut from a kusi, he should not look in a mirror. And because, as we said before in the parish, the goyim are not suspect of shvichus damim, therefore we don't need that statement.
The kusim.
On the other hand, continues the Yerushalmi, they gave special permission to the members of Rabbi Gamliel's family to look in a mirror even when they're getting haircuts from Kosim, because they need to look good for the government. Now, the implication, Tosfos says, is the fact that they have to give Rabbi Gamliel's family special permission to use a mirror when otherwise one wouldn't have been needed implies that other than that, a man shouldn't be looking in a mirror. Now, why is that? Because it's the problem of Yubash Gever Simlas Isha. We know that a man is not allowed to wear women's clothes or otherwise act in feminine ways. Looking in a mirror would be a feminine kind of thing to do, because they look in a mirror to look at their appearance.
Let me ask you a question.
One second. Before you start asking questions, let's discuss this a little bit. The fact of the matter is, we do see that people nowadays look in mirrors.
Yeah.
So you have two different ways of understanding it. Therefore, one way of understanding it, which is Tosfos is that there is an absolute issue on a man to look in a mirror, with the exception of when we're saying over here that he needs it in order to save his life from a potential hostile guy, or he needs it in order to look good for the government. That's what Tosfos is saying. Other than those kinds of things, a man is not allowed to look in a mirror because it would be lo yobash gever. On the other hand, the Ram doesn't clearly say that he's arguing with Tosfos, but many Mephoshim understand him that way, that he's saying it's a situational thing. If you have a place where it's common for men to look in mirrors, then it's not Lo Yubash Gever anymore.
Like today.
So therefore, so now in Shulchan Aruch, it brings both opinions. The Mechaber says that you should not, that a man should not look in a mirror at all, with the exception that we're saying over here when he's getting a haircut. And the Ramah says, in a place where it's common for men to look in mirrors, then you're allowed to. And nevertheless, though, he says a Baal Nefesh should still be careful about it. But practically speaking, I mean, we look in mirrors, for example, to put out to adjust our tefillin. That's allowed. But common practice is like what the Rambam and the Ran are saying, that in a place where it's normal for men to look in mirrors, you're allowed to. But nevertheless, we're saying that a Baal Nefesh should be more careful about it and hold himself to a higher standard. That would be absolutely also, because that plucking white hairs out from between the black, that's what Gemara mentioned in other places, is outright also, that's definitely what you're washing. That's something that even nowadays only
in the mirror to check the skin,
so if you need it for medicinal purposes, obviously we're not talking about. We're talking about where a person is looking in a mirror to check their appearance or whatever. Yeah.
You even say that situation today has changed, though, not right? In saying that people need to change their appearance for work.
So it depends. I mean, right. I mean, so we're talking about, right. I mean, if we're talking about, for example, a person wants to make sure, like, they don't have a big stain on their collar or whatever, fine, is one thing. You know, you don't want to go out looking for schlumps. But again, that's according to the Torah, according to the Ram, and the Ramah is a little bit different. But again, so, you know, you're looking in order to make sure you don't have a big stain on your shirt or whatever is one thing. But to look at it in order to make yourself look beautiful and then whatever, so, you know, that
a woman has.
So a woman, sure. As a matter of fact, my wife told me, I'm not sure what her, I guess she heard it from one of her teachers, I don't know, that the Rebbe was big on that people should have a mirror hanging up near the door of their house, so that when a woman is leaving her house, she can fix herself up and make sure she looks decent before she goes out, make sure that her shades are properly covering her hair, etc. Yeah. Okay.
Very nice.
Yeah. Okay. Onward.
So that's a problem, because the man also goes out of the house and you couldn't pull it in yourself.
Fine, but again, there's a difference between looking at a schlump and, okay, you know, fine, okay, so man. So again, the point is that I'm, since nowadays both men and women commonly look in mirrors and it's not actually ulcer, it's still just a thing, yeah, about nefesh. The halacha is like that we Ashkenazim follow the Ramah, which says that it would be allowed. The later posts can speak about it. So I think they mentioned this idea about when it's more common, or the difference between going between looking in order not to look like a schlump versus looking in order to There are some of the posts in Machronim that's true who frown on the idea of using a mirror for tefillin. All right, onward. Rav Chana bar Bizna have a mistapim over to Chavim b'shvili nidah hajar. One time, Rav Chana, by the way, it does say, by the way, as far as this whole business of getting a haircut from a goy, so technically, again, you know, this is one of those dinim that applies primarily when the goyim are choshed on shvichos damim, which is less so the case nowadays. And anyway, the practically speaking, the haircutting equipment they use nowadays is not necessarily so given to be to being able to be used for that. They don't usually use suede edge razors. They use
They
have them, but whatever. Yeah, nowadays, in general, the goyim are not.
They use razor
at the end. Yeah, okay, fine. But then not, I don't know, straight edge razor, but whatever. Nowadays, the goyim are less kosher on shvichos damim anyway, and besides that, also, this whole thing that we mentioned about adam kosher, again, to a certain extent, everybody's considered an adam kosher nowadays because of the penalties for it, whatever.
I think most places are shisarabit, meaning that there's windows.
Right, there is that. Well, the Gemara is going to say in a second, but she really didn't know how to wait, so that part is not so simple. But I will mention, it does say in some Sfarim, I think the Dav Chechova brings it, that al pi Kabbalah, a Jew should not be getting a haircut from a goy anyway. So aside from the halacha issue, there's the Kabbalah issue. Okay.
This is more than my attack to Jim. Is that premeditated? Or spur of the moment? I mean, spur could be premeditated. Why would you do such a stupid thing?
Unless it's for the moment. Yeah. It could be either one. I don't know. Okay, well, here's an example. Rav Chana bar Bizna one time was getting a haircut from a goy in the side street of Nahada, Omerle, and as the goy is cutting Rav Chana's hair, he says, Chana, yoy kurich lezuga. Your neck would be a good fit for my razor. Omar, Rav Chana says to himself, Tasi Lee, da Avri Ad Rav Meir. So Rav Chana says, you know what, I deserve that kind of thing because I was over on what Rav Meir says, that a Jew shouldn't get a haircut from a goy. So the question is, what do you mean by Rav Bonan, like Omar? You're telling me he was over not just on what Rav Meir says. In the Mishnah, we had Rav Meir saying that a Jew should never get a haircut from a goy, and the Chachamim saying it depends whether it's in Rosh Hashanah that's allowed. Right. But here it wasn't in Rosh Hashanah, so what do you mean I was over on Rav Meir? He was over on what the Rav Bonan say also. The answer is no. Amer, because he figured, Amer de Omer, no, so the question is, Amer de Omer Rabbanan, Rosh Hashanah, granted that Rabbanan said you're allowed to take a haircut from a goy in Rosh Hashanah, where a goy will be afraid to try anything, Rosh Hashanah Yachid, me Omer, did they say that in Rosh Hashanah Yachid? These shvili side streets of Nahada are like a Rosh Hashanah Yachid. The answer is Vahusavar. So what was Rav Chana bar Bizna thinking? He figured Shvili de Nahada, Kivin de Shchichi Rabim, since you have many people do pass through them, Kivin de Shchichi Rabim, he figured it's like a Rosh Hashanah Rabim. So what you're saying over here about windows and whatever might be sort of like that. Yes, you can see through the windows, but are there enough Rabim for it to be a real Rosh Hashanah Rabim? Not necessarily, yes.
Well, what do you mean by Rosh Hashanah Rabim?
So I don't know if it means means the technical definition of 600,000. But Rashi says to shom ovim v'shavim todu, that the shvili d'nado, you do have people constantly passing by, but it's not like a huge number of people. You'll have every minute there'll be somebody passing by or whatever, but not like in the maybe like Montgomery or whatever, but not necessarily like Kingston. We have a constant flow.
Kingston would be considered Rosh Hashanah.
Maybe not. It really depends whether you need 600,000 or not. You know, you have the okay. Alright, onward. Then we said, we said in the Braise before that if a Jew is giving a goy a haircut, when he reaches close to the bluris, the Jew should stop giving the haircut, so he's not leaving and making the bluris nice in honor of Avod Azara. So Bakama, how far away does he have to stop? Amar of Malki, Amar of Adaba Abba, Shlosha Etzvois, L'choruach, L'choruach. Three fingers in each direction. So that's two and a half, 3 inches.
Three finger breadth.
Right. Yeah, that's usually what it means. Usually it's voice, unless otherwise specified, means some breadth. Yeah, according to Rav Avraham Chaim Noah, some breadth is an etzva, is about 3/4 of an inch, according to the Chazon Ish, it's about an inch. So multiply that by 3. Okay. Amr of Chanina, Amr of Chanina, Breid Rav Ikta, Shvud Shvachos. Now you have two Amiroyim with very similar names. You had Rav Malkiyah that we just quoted, and you have Rav Malkiyoy. How do we remember which one said which? So Rav Chanina Breder of Ikka says Shvud. The din is Shvud Shvachos v'Gumeris Rav Malkiyoy. The din involving a Shvud, which is a spit for roasting, which is a din in Masechta Beit, so that once you've used a spit for roasting on Yom Tov, then you can kind of kick it off to the side over there. Shvachos is a din in ksubas, about a woman has a woman has a certain number of shvachos in her house. Nevertheless, there's still certain kinds of housework that she has to do. Maids, yeah. So she says there's still certain kinds of housework that she has to do.
Right.
That's shvachos. But gumos is a din in nida, that when we say that a boy or girl has to have shtei sairis in order to be considered a gadol. So we say that if you have gumos, so there's hair follicles, even if you don't see any actual hair in them, that's still considered a sign of maturity. Because if there are follicles, it means there was hair and then it fell out. That's gumos. So all those three are Malkiyoy said. On the other hand, blotus, the din about blotus that we just said, that you have to keep three etzvos away from it. Ephraim Mikla, a din in Makos regarding putting ashes on a wound, where we say over there you shouldn't do it because it's sort of like tattooing. Ugvina, and the din involving cheese, which later on in our parak we're going to have a reason why cheese made by Goyim is usur. Those three are of Malkiyah. Those three were said by Rav Malkiyah. On the other hand, Amar a Papa says no, there's a different way of explaining who said what. Masnissin or Masnissin of Malkiyah, anything that's in direct reference to a Mishnah or a Braisa was said by Rav Malkiyah. Shmaitza, anything that was said as a statement of Amiroyim, not directly related to a Mishnah, is Rav Malkiyah. The Simona, and the way to remember, which is which, Masnissa Malkasa. The Mishnah is the queen, and therefore Malkasa is similar to Malkiyah. So that helps you remember, anything with a Mishnah or a Braisa is a Malkiyah, and anything else is a Malkiyah. So the question is, my Binai, what's the practical difference between, what's the actual difference between Rav Chanina and Rav Papa's version? Which one are they switching around? The answer is Ikka Binai Shvachos. The difference is the one about the maidservant. That one is in reference to a Mishnah. So therefore, according to Rav Papa's rule, since it has to do with a Mishnah, it would be Rav Malkiyah. On the other hand, according to Rav Chanina, it would be one of Rav Malkiyah's statements. The Tosfos talks about it doesn't make a practical difference, but we want to know who said what. Rashi points out over here, and Tosfos points out in a few other places where this Gemara is brought, what about Ephraim Mikla is the other way around. The one of Ephraim Mikla, the one about ashes, is not in direct reference to a Mishnah or a Braisa. According to Rav Chanina, it would be Rav Malkiyah. According to Rav Papa, it should be Rav Malkiyah. So Tosfos says that Rav Papa is just referring to what Rav Malkiyah says. In other words, he doesn't necessarily have to say it's 3 and 3. He may say it's 4 and 2. Tosfos in other places talks about maybe it means middle one of each list. Shvachos is the middle one in one list. Ephraim Mikla is the middle one in the other list, and therefore he flips them around.
Okay. All right.
So now we're going to start. Now we're here till the end of the parak. We're starting a whole new topic. Why it's not a separate Terek, I have no idea, but that's the way of Mishnayos sometimes. From here on till the end of the Terek, we're going to be talking about foods and other objects of Goyim that are Osir or Mutter. So these are more practical day-to-day halachas than many of the other ones we've been learning about so far.
But here's where we're going to start talking about Yayin Netzach and Goyish cheese and so on and so forth. That's going to be the subject of the
rest of this Terek, the next dozen or so blocks. Sure.
Well, I guess go to another barber and finish the job. I don't know, but that's what you have to do. Who else to go? Well, tell him I don't want a blurist.
Fine, shave it off.
What if he asks him to cut it closer to the blurist?
No good. Can't.
What are you supposed to tell him?
He tells him, I'm sorry, but your blurist is an honor of a desire. I can't do that. Mishnah says, Eilu dvarim shall ovdi kachav masurin. The following things of Goyim are masur. The isur on isur hanah, and the isur on them is an isur hanah. You're not allowed to eat them, but you're not allowed to derive benefit from them. They are as follows: hayayin, wine, v'achoymet shall ovdi kachav masurin kolot hayayin. So I mean, right? The most of the genome of yayin that we're going to be dealing with later in the text. Another month or so, Rez Hashem, we'll get to that one. But here we're going to talk about it briefly. Here we're going to talk about it briefly because we're mentioning all the various foods of goyim that are oster to eat or oster kavanah from, as the case may be. So therefore, we're mentioning wine as well. The dinim of wine are very, very complicated, and we're going to spend the last twenty blot or so of the Gemara of Or Masechta talking about the specific details about it. Okay, so yayin.
Also, vinegar of goyim that was originally wine. In other words, what we're talking about is, as opposed to if the goy buys vinegar from Israel, that's allowed. You're allowed to have a knot in that, you're allowed to use it, whatever. But if he had it originally as wine and then it turned into
vinegar, it would still be awesome. Because the problem with wine, the problem with wine, they have two different kinds of isurim on wine. You have, as we'll talk about at the beginning of the Gemara, you have Yayin Nesek, wine that was actually poured out in honor of a Getchke, which is also Jaradai says we'll establish in the Gemara. And then you have Stam Yenam, wine of Goyim, where we're concerned that they may have used it for Nesek, and we don't know, or even if not, they may, just the fact that the Gemara is going to talk about later on in the parak, you want to keep a social distance between Jews and Goyim, because drinking their wine could end up leading to intermarriage.
That's a Gzera.
That part is Jabbanon, but Tosfos actually points out over here, at the beginning of the Gemara over here, that it is a Gzeira Jabbanon, but the Rabbanon made it very similar to the Din Daraisa, in the sense that just like Yain Nesek, wine that was actually poured in honor of a Getchke, would be also Daraisa, because it's Tekroi Vesavet Azara. So also, the Rabbanon made the same rule when it comes to Stam Yenim of Goyim, they also made it also Bahanot, to make it parallel to the Din Daraisa. Some of the other Rishonim learn differently, actually. They learn that the reason is the Chachamim were concerned if you're allowed to have Hanah from wine of Goyim, you may come to confuse it with wine of Nesek. Given that Yain Nesek, real Yain Nesek, is also Hanah, if you're allowed to have Hanah from Goyish wine, you may think, well, then it can't be much different than the wine that was actually poured in honor of Avodah Zarah, which would be also Jared
Eisen. So it has to be strictly wine, or it can be...
No, we're talking strictly wine. We're going to deal with that.
Wine.
Strictly wine. Or things that are made with wine. I mean, for example, it also means brandy. It also means whatever, different things that contain wine. That's what we're saying, vinegar over here.
What I don't understand is, if you use, let's say, something that was in the purpose of the Zara that's not wine, according to this, it's allowed. Wine.
No, we're not saying that. Other purpose of the Zara is also offered. We're mentioning wine over here again. We're not talking about... There's wine that was actually poured, which is also just like anything else that was offered to Avodah Zarah.
That we'll mostly deal with later on in the Masechta.
It
had to have been poured. We're saying that's also Daraisa.
Right.
But anything that was offered to a Getchke is also Daraisa, including wine. All it is is, for example, you could have a goy could also conceivably, let's say, for example, we'll have later on in the Masechta, we'll have a goy could conceivably offer salt to Avodah Zarah. But we don't say salt of goyim is ordinarily offered.
If it was intended to be offered but had not been
then
offered.
Then that ain't hektish Avodah Zarah. That's what we're going to have later on in our Mishnah, actually. In our Mishnah, we're going to talk about that. So wait. Anyway, I was going to say,
now, Rashi brings an interesting thing from the Goyim, which is that nowadays, the Goyim don't generally pour wine in honor of their Getchkes, then therefore, maybe wine of Goyim, maybe Sam Yenim is not also Bahana, only drink, or to Bahana.
So the Gzeder was made, therefore it's also Bahana, it's also to eat, but not necessarily Hana. No, so they say that actually, no.
So therefore,
it's still offered to drink, but maybe you could have a no. So you have, for example, Rambam writes that that's true of, for example, Muslims. The Rambam says Muslims are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Therefore, if they touch wine, it only becomes also to drink, not to have a no. But on the other hand, for example, according to the Rambam, if a Christian were to touch wine, it would be Stam Yenim, and would be also Bahana. According to this thing that Rashi mentioned, According to Rashi, it would mean even then it would be Mutar Bahana, because even if we argue the Christians are Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and we discussed at the beginning of the Masechta the different opinions of the Rishonim, whether they are or not, nevertheless, they don't pour wine in honor of their Getchkes. They drink it, fine, but that's different. They don't pour it in honor of Yashka or whoever, and therefore you can't say, so they talk about that may depend on the two explanations why wine of Goyim is offered. If you say the reason is because the Chachamim made the Takana to be similar to the Din Daraisa, then it doesn't matter. The Takana is still Takana. If you say they did it, as other Rishonim say, that the reason is in order not to confuse it with Yain Nesach, well, if there is no Yain Nesach nowadays, there's nothing to confuse it with. So therefore, the Isser Hanah wouldn't apply, just the Isser Shtiyah.
And how do we pass them if someone wants to open a store selling?
In general, that's a different thing. In general, you're not allowed to do business with things that are also to eat. In general, you're not allowed to do business with things that are also to eat and drink.
So it's not so much a question of opening a store to sell Goyish wine. That might be problematic because of that alone. The question would be, if, let's say, if you have a bottle of Goyish... Right, we're talking... No, yeah, well, because the whole thing, Yain of Goyim is only also the Rabbanan, right. But for example, so we're not talking about that. We're talking about, let's say, for example, a person has a bottle of Goyish wine. Is he allowed to sell it, for example? Is he allowed to have other kind of hanah from it? So according to this thing that Rashi says, and then the Rambam brings it in Shulchan Aruch, yes, he would be allowed to. Okay, onward. So meanwhile, back to the Mishnah, though. We're talking about Yayin. So we're talking about in those times when definitely Sam Yenam was also Banah. Vinegar of Goyim that was originally wine while it was in the hands of the Goy, because again, he may have done Nisloch with it, and now it turned to vinegar. As opposed to, if he bought it as vinegar, he's not going to pour out vinegar in honor of his Getchkin.
If it was wine.
But if it was wine while it was in the Goy's hands, then you have a problem. You have to ask him, I guess. I don't know. The Cheres Hadrayoni, also Hadrayoni earthenware.
So we'll talk about tomorrow what that is. Basically, a kind of portable wine that they made in those days. They mixed earthenware, clay with wine and make it into earthenware, and that way when they wanted wine, they would soak it and the wine would come out.
The soldiers would use it when they were away from home. It's called Hadrianni, I guess, because Hadrian came up with the invention, or his soldiers did, whatever.
But sponge, basically.
Sort of.
But Ernest also skins of animals that have a hole where the heart was. Because what they did is at a ritual for certain number of others, they take the animal, they cut a hole in the skin in front of the heart, and rip out the heart from the animal and sacrifice it to their death. I don't know if alive or dead, but whatever it was, the point is they have a hole there, and therefore the skin is from something that was also on top of the other, therefore it's nothing. I don't know. I mean, I know what
the skin was done.
But never stop, because the whole animal was killed in honor of Lord Azara. Whether it was shepherded first or whether it was killed by ripping out the heart, either way, the whole thing is the credit of Lord Azara, so the skin also becomes awful. And I don't know really, I mean, you know, I don't know enough about Greek and Roman or whatever idolatry to know what particular cult or whatever they had within. But for example, in Mexico, it's known the Aztecs did like that with human beings. They sacrificed them to their death because they're ripping out their heart. Yeah. All right, anyway. Rav Shimon Gamliel says it depends on the shape of the hole. Bizman shah kerah salaifogol, if the hole is round, then it's also, because that would be the kind of hole that they would make for this ritual. Moshuk mutter, but if the hole is long, then it's mutter, because that kind of thing they don't do well with his other. Then it's just time it accidentally got ripped or whatever. So then Rav Shimon Gamliel says it wouldn't be a problem. The Chacham still disagrees
for reasons that we'll see in the Gemara.
Would be very quickly confused.
No, well, we'll see why. If meat is being brought into a house of Avodah Zarah, then it's still mutter b'hana, not to eat, obviously, it's straight for meat, but it's mutter b'hana, because even though, like you were saying, the goy may plan to offer it to his getchka, fine, but planning doesn't make it offer yet.
What about if it's meat that's brought into a
house of Avodah Zarah? Fine, as long as it hasn't been offered yet, then fine. But meat that's being brought out of there is also the nation because it's connected to the Rabbi Kiva. Because Rabbi Kiva says it's like karbonas that are brought to the dead, meaning Tavarizara, which are also Bahana. We have to assume, in other words, it was offered to Tavarizara in the sense of being placed in front of it or whatever, and then the guy is taking it
back home to take it and have a party, and that would, so therefore now at this point it's also Bahana. Ha'urchan the Tarpus, another din, when you have Goyim who are going to Tarpus, which is a place of Avodah Zarah, and they're going from a distance. It's not a specific place. Tarpus is a general name for Avodah Zarah. Tarpus has a meaning of embarrassment, humiliation, something that ought to be covered up, whatever. So it's a derogatory term for Avodah Zarah. Yeah. Also, losseis for losseis imahan. You're not allowed to do business with them because, as we learned at the beginning of the sector, they're going to go thank their getchkas for the good business. Also, they may use the actual object that you sold to them or whatever and use it for a korban for their getchkas. And the chit of avoyin mutar, and people who are coming back from there, it's mutter, because then already it's after the fact. Now here we're not talking about the Tosfos Rabbeinu Ochanan, which is a different collection of Tosfos than we have at the side over here, points out, we're not talking about this as we had din in the first perek, we had all the dinim about doing business with them before, after their chagas or whatever. Here we're not talking about that. Here we're talking, they're going from a long distance. So let's say, for example, imagine you have a place, Avodah Zarah, which is a week's travel away. So it's sad, the dinim that we learned in the first perek, you only have 3 days before you offer.
from here, where we know that they're going for the disciples, then it's also, even if it's, let's say, a week before or whatever, because then there's still the concern that they're doing, that they're going, we know they're going there on their pilgrimage, therefore there's more concern that
they have the name of, they're thinking of the name of the Abba Dezara, and they're going to go thank it, or they're going to go use the state sacrifice there,
that's
whatever. That's what the din is. I mean, so the Tosfos Rabbeinu O'Hanan is explaining the reason why our Mishnah is not redundant, is because before we were talking about any goyim 3 days before the Chagah, and on the Chagah, here we're talking about specifically the ones who we know are on a pilgrimage to their Taukos, to their place of Avodah Zarah. We'll continue with the Mishnah tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.